with your host this evening, Richard Barr. Coming up on 9 p.m. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Backstage Stories with Marcia Pendleton.
Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Then why not every man? He delivered Daniel from the lion's den, and Jonah from the belly of the whale, and the Hebrew children from the fiery furnace. Then why not every man? Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Then why not every man?
Good evening, and welcome to Backstage Stories on listener-supported WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at WBAI.org. I'm Marcia Pendleton, the producer and your host. And we just heard actor, singer, playwright, and producer Rashada Abrams singing Didn't My Lord Deliver Daniel, a Negro spiritual that is part of the world premiere play Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose, about educator and civil rights activist Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. Abrams, a four-time Adelco Award winner, wrote, produced, and performs in the play that will run at the Theater Lab in New York, October 7th through the 23rd, 2022. I got the chance to speak with Rashada earlier this week. Here is part one of our conversation. And we're speaking with actor, singer, playwright, and producer Rashada Abrams. And welcome to Backstage Stories.
Thank you, Marcia. It's a pleasure to be here.
And like we do with all of our guests, people would like to know your background. Where are you from? What is it that made you choose this life as an artist? Your mentors, and also to get into a little bit of the best advice that you've received and the kind of advice that you ignored in terms of your journey. So let's start with your background. Where are you from? How did you grow up? What part did the arts play in your life as a young person?
Okay. Well, I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and I grew up in a musical family. My dad is Dr. Muhal Richard Abrams, and he was a composer, a pianist, composer, multi-instrumentalist, historian, mentor. He received a Doris Duke, as well as he's a jazz master, and he co-founded the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians and also the Jazz Institute of Chicago. So my mom was a composer. My grandmother was a composer. So I grew up in a musical family, so the arts was always around me. And from early on, performance was just a part of what we do, you know? Mm-hmm. I started dancing. Actually, my dad started me on piano when I was younger, and my cousin and I, and he would teach us every day in our basement in Chicago. And I also gravitated towards dance, and that's something I was interested in as well. So he said, okay, if she wants to dance, you know, let her go on and explore that as well. And from there, it was acting, because we always put on, my cousins and I always put on family shows, and, you know, for family gatherings, Christmas or any kind of family reunion, we would always put on a show. And actually, I'm missing one thing. My very first show I did, I was 2 years old, and I played, yeah, but I remember this, Marcia. I played a mouse So, and this was Catherine Slade. It was a play she did. She was here in New York as well, but this is when we were all still in Chicago, and her name was Karoma. And I believe she teaches at DePaul University now. But the play, it had to be something like The Nutcracker. I played the mouse, and I remember at 2 years old that they had a big mouse head on me, and I just remember the mouse inside the mouse head, I was hot, and I squeaked. So that's what I do recall it too. But I had the best time, and I always loved performing. My father would have rehearsals in our basement, and the musician would come over, and one in particular, Mina Claudine Myers, who is now my music director, but she taught me singing, and she's very close, in our family. She's like my aunt. And every time she would come over, I would find a place to hide behind and to surprise or do some kind of dance that I learned or that I was practicing. So I always loved performing. I think watching the energy in my family as they performed, it was something that, like I said, it was just a part of what we did, So when we moved to New York, I decided, oh, and at some point, sorry, this was fun. I was in a camp, and it was during the summer. And I remember I played a witch in a play, and I remember they had this big hat on me, and I mean, it was just getting in my way. So I took the hat off and I just flung it across the stage so that I could act better, because it was just getting in my But when we came to New York, I decided that, hey, wow, this acting thing is, I discovered it was something you could actually do in life. Mm-hmm. And the journey of an is a continuous journey. And I think if it's something you, any artistic journey is a continuous journey. And as I learned from my dad in particular, it's a lifelong love, and you're always learning, you're always growing, you're always, inputting information into yourself. Like Daddy always had a book about something. He's an artist. He painted. He did so many things, and it gave me the view that you can do so many things, So when I got to New York, I decided I wanted to be an actor. I went to professional children's school here. And then I went on to NYU, Tisch School of the Arts, graduated with BFA and honors in drama, and a master's in educational theater, where I was able to go to England and taught and learn more, about theater and education, drama and education. At the time, I thought I wanted to have my own school. And then when I finished school with my master's degree, I said, no, I don't want to have a school. I want to just continue being an artist. And so I performed, and I temped during the day, and I decided I wanted to make the most money. So I learned all of the software. This is at a time when the computer was new, right? Mm-hmm. And no one had computers in their homes. So I stayed at the temp agency, and I learned every word processing software except for Wang. Because Wang is just a black screen. Nobody knew what was going on with that. And they did put me on a Wang job, and I was like, okay, God help. And God helped me figure it out. But so I became the highest paid temp. And in the evening, I was acting, or if I had a children's theater job. And the thing that made me stop doing that is I got a job at a Crossroads theater company. So that was my first equity show. And I auditioned because the director thought it'd be good for me to audition in front of Pat McCorkle, who was one of the premier casting directors. And I got the job.
What was the show that you auditioned for at Crossroads? Because we have to remind people that Crossroads Theater Company is one of the premier theater companies in the country, a Tony Award-winning theater company. And continues to carry the message, the torch, the mission of Black theaters across this country. A very, very important legacy. So continue with your first professional experience with Crossroads.
Yes. Well, the play was called Fear Itself by Eugene Lee. Mm. Imani Douglas was director. Mm-hmm. And now my sister, Kim Yancey Moore, was in the play. David Willows Fontenot, Don Swaby. And we had such a great time. And my character was Ivory, and my scene partner was the fabulous Ramon Melendez Moses. And I have to tell the story about Ramon. I went in and did my audition, and then I got a callback. And so I went into the callback, and then I saw, I heard I was going to be working with, you know, Ramon Melendez Moses. Now, I'm new to the scene in terms, because I've been traveling all over the world performing before then. I was with Mama traveling in Ukraine and all that before then. So I'm new to this scene. It's like this next level of, you know, acting. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that's the guy. And so he was out in the hall, just, you know, in the stairwell. And so I said, hey, do you want to, you know, go over, you know, the scene? He says, no. The last time I did that, you know, it's like all the energy was, you know, in the personal rehearsal, not in the room. I said, okay. So I sat there and started my work, because in the play that Eugene wrote, my character, Ivory, now, the people looked at her as off, but you can't look at your own character as off. She knew exactly what she was talking about. But I was fixated on this man that Ramon was playing, and his name was True Man Full of Love Jr. That's the name that
Right, exactly.
And he was supposed to be my high school sweetheart. So we were separated in time. And then he came back to town. So I sat there and I started my work as an artist, projecting onto Ramon all the qualities that I needed him to be in order for him to be my man in this play, right? My man, meaning Ivory's man in the play. And when we got into their room, I was full with all that I had imbued him with and all that I was working with inside of my instrument. You know, for those who don't know, you know, you're the artist, the actor, your body is your instrument, your voice is your instrument. This is what we play. And he was full with what he was working on. And Marcia, we got in that room and things were happening for the first time. And I was saying the words that Eugene wrote. Ramon was saying the words that Eugene wrote. But the moment-to-moment work that we were doing with each other is what got us that job. So at one point, my character's still like, oh, my man is back. I put my hand, I think, on Ramon's knee. And Ramon took my hand and threw it. And he says, that all you want? The way he said it, it tore me apart. It just pierced my whole being. And I started to sob. And then the actress came back and said, oh my God, I can't see the words on the page. But that's the effect that he had on me, because that's how deep we were in it. And then he went and took my face and wiped, because all as a character and what I worked on, all I wanted from him is acceptance at that moment. And he wiped the tears from my eyes. And I think he might have cradled my face. And that's all I needed, right? Mm-hmm. And then I remember Imani was flipping pages going, is that it? Because it was like, they were all, Ricardo Khan was in the room, you know? He was, you know, he's artistic director, yes. You know? And everybody was like, what the? And so we were like, yeah, because there were no more, you know, nothing else to the scene. That was it. Wherever we stopped, that was the end of the scene. But they were like, what? And so in the room, they said, well, we've got our Ivory. We've got our Truman. And then Pat McCorkle said, because I'm the only one in the room that's not equity, said, finally, someone who deserves to have her card.
Wow. And,
you know, and Ramon and I went out of there and we got, you know, we got downstairs. It was the audition was somewhere on 8th Avenue in the 40s. We got downstairs and we were like, you bad. And, you know, we were just like, and then I got the call at my temp job. And they told me I got the part. And they were like, oh, well, you can. I was like, I'm not coming back. I was a great secretary for CEOs, CFOs, CFOs, everybody, presidents. I was good, but I was done.
Okay. Right? So you knew that it was time for you to walk away.
Oh, yeah.
You got your equity card from a Black theater company.
Yes, I did.
I think that is important for people to know that yet and still Black theaters are creating opportunities for people to become part of Actors Equity Association and any other artistic union that is happening. That is so very important. Black theater is vital, like August Wilson said.
Oh, yes.
But it's just not funded. It's just not funded. Right. So I am eternally grateful to you to hear that story, so I could can continue to make that point, because I make it often on the show, the importance of Black theaters today, because people think, well, everybody else is doing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, right, in terms of producing, which is true, but Black theaters are still the incubators for Black talent.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about your mentors. Who guided you through this journey becoming an artist? It sounds like, it's definitely sounds like that some of those mentors raised you.
Yes.
Okay. So,
and that's just, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that, the mentors who raised you, who were, you were in their home because you were their child.
Yes.
And then those folks outside of your family circle who became a part of your family circle. So yes, let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, we'll start with my daddy, my mama, and my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
They are the pillars, and they're, you know, we always say the shoulders upon which we stand. It's more than that. Mm-hmm. They imbued me with so much love, and understanding and respect, for yourself and for your fellow human being, right? I get emotional about it because I sing this song with a group we'll talk about maybe later. God has smiled on me. And when I thought about what God has done for me, I cried. I finally got to the point I can sing the song without crying, but the truth is still there, that God has just blessed me so much. And I think about watching my dad get up every morning for all my life, and he does his exercises, and then he goes to play his piano, and he goes to compose some music, and he goes to read a book about something he's working on, and he's going to some creation, some artwork he's doing, or anything else. He's investigated computer music. He, like I said, he always had a book, always in a state of learning. And it gave me a respect for what that is. And my mom, always, always knowing that there's nothing that you cannot do, giving me that if it's something you want to do, then you say what it is you want to do, set your mind to do it and do it. My grandmother always say, I mean, we were like the, you know, the, I was best friends with all three of them. My grandmother and I, we were like, we called it the dynamic duo. Just sidebar, the next play I'm writing is about my grandmother and my relationship. That'll be next year though, because she also composed music. So I want her songs to be heard in the world. But, you know, always there supporting me, no matter what. Always in your corner. And I got here in the world and with other people, and I didn't realize everybody didn't have that. So then I had to adjust myself, because people would always say, why are you so happy? I'm like, why not be happy? Then you understand there are different levels, and some people were supported, some weren't. But okay, so let's all in this business, let's do what it is we love and make something beautiful. So that is, I would say, my foundation. Mm-hmm. And even though my father has passed on, my grandmother has passed on, they're still with me spiritually. And we, and my mother and I, we're moving forward in life. That's what you do, you know? Now, in terms of, there are a lot of people throughout my life, but I want to give a nod over to the Actors Studio. There are certain key people, like I'm going to say Estelle Parsons, because other people have, but Estelle is the only one that, in my 22 years of being a member, has consistently made space in her schedule and her time to input something into the younger generation coming up. I tell everybody I learned how to be a woman on that stage from Estelle because, you know, the business aspect of it. You're here to do a job and do it. So, and do it well. Now, of course, I had all that in my foundation with my mother, father, my grandmother, but then here's someone who's not in my family. So I always, she doesn't know I call her this, but if she ever hears this, I always call her my fairy godmother, right? Because that's how she, you know, she was. Another person who became, we had a short time together because I met her early when I was in school, Billy Allen. Mm. Billy, my gosh. Billy, I'm in the League of Professional Theater Women. Billy was the second president. They brought Billy in, Julia Miles did, because of who she was in the world of theater, right? And Billy said that her mother helped Mary McLeod Bethune found the National Council of Negro Women, right? So I started with Billy when I was in New York University doing a show, Audrey and Kennedy's Funny House of a Negro. I reconnected with Billy after I joined the League of Professional Theater Women. I was like, my God, Billy's a part of this. Billy was like the second president, right? And then we reconnected, and then we started having a friendship, right? And I remember I did a thing where I was, you know, you join committees when you're in organization to try and help better things and help people, because I mean that's what my family is about, helping people move forward to the next step as well. And I had this panel, I was co-chair networking, and we had this panel where I thought, just like in our history, you don't know where you're going until you know where you come from. So I had this idea, well, why don't we get all of the past presidents and the current presidents of the League of Professional Theater Women and see, well, what was happening when you were president? What was happening, you know? And it was interesting that it was the same thing was happening just in a different time period. But Billy started us off telling us that she knew when Julia Miles approached her about forming the League of Professional Theater Women, that she knew it could be done because she had seen what Mary McLeod Bethune had done, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting, you know? But there's so many people. And then, of course, the people of a New Federal, you know? When I was writing my first show. So you had Michael Dinwiddie. He was one of my professors, PJ Gibson, who also lived in my building, right? Mm-hmm. She's been supportive of me, you know, and Lawrence Holden, you know? That's another story about him, because I did a reading of his, of Mary and Eleanor, and I was so enamored with Mary. And he says, well, you should write your own play. And then I did. I wrote First by Faith, The Life of Mary McLeod Bethune. And, which went into this. Yes, I'm
and
sorry.
That is a good place for us to get ready to talk about your next piece about Mary McLeod Bethune, how you went from a solo to sharing this story with six other actors. Or is it five other actors?
Five other actors, right.
Five, and you're the sixth.
Yes.
So let's talk about that on the other side of the break, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Sounds great. Supported WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at WBAI.org. We have been listening to a conversation that I had earlier this week with four-time ADELCO Award winner, Rashada Abrams, about Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose. The play, written and produced by Abrams, will run October 7th through the 23rd at the Theater Lab in New York City. She also stars in the play. Here is a monologue performed by Rashada as Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. Dr. Bethune is addressing laborers in 1920 who she has helped prepare to vote despite threats from the Klan and other forces of white supremacy to suppress the vote. Sound familiar? 100 years later? Of course it does, unfortunately. We'll hear part two of our conversation on the other side of the monologue.
Sisters and I met earlier this week. We're all excited. The prohibitionist candidate must win this race for mayor. He is throwing his support for a Negro high school. He believes our community should have lights, better streets, and a sewage system. Thank God our school has Frank Taylor to help us with our plumbing. Will the laborers pass the literacy test? Well, I hope they will. I told the ministers to leave the butter off their bread and pay their poll tax on time. Don't be afraid. Just hold your head up high, look the man in the eye, and pay your poll tax. Women just received the right to vote this summer. Now, Negroes are registered to vote. We don't have to count jelly beans in a jar or provide references from white men. More of us are educated and will pass the literacy tests. Our people have paid the Negro poll taxes. Soon, we will get Jim Crow abolished. These are exciting times.
And we're back speaking with Rashada Abrams, and circling back to what we spoke about at the end of the last segment, we want to talk about your journey, your discovering and telling the story of Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune and how that went from the solo performance to sharing it with a multiracial cast of five people, six including yourself. And the world premiere play is called Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose. So could you walk us through how you went from This Far by Faith to Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose?
Okay. So when I did the reading with Lawrence Holder of his play, and I was so enamored with Mary McLeod Bethune that he told me, well, write your own play. And so I said, okay. And I started on this journey at a New Federal Theater in their playwriting workshop. And before I started, theater and what we do is very spiritual for me. So I prayed to Mary McLeod Bethune's parents, and I asked them, could I embark on this journey? And I felt that what I received back from them was, yes, you can embark on this journey. And then in my mind, I'm saying, but don't mess it up, right? So I started more research, and I found that I actually became angry because I didn't know as much about her as I should have. We learn so much about so many of our other luminaries in our diaspora, and we really don't drill in and find out more, like what made them who they were. And so that's what I found myself in this place of needing to know, how did you do this with all these obstacles, these insurmountable obstacles in your way? How did you do this? How did your faith carry you through? What did you do? Because I always feel that when you learn about someone else's journey, that can help you along on your journey. And I found with my show that actually happened, people would come up to me and tell me certain things, and people say, oh, thank you so much for having this, because we didn't know anything about her, and why didn't we know? And I found in my research that a lot of my friends or friends of friends were the descendants of people who had studied with Mary McLeod Bethune. And Billy, like I said, Billy Allen, her mom, Billy had a story that she told me when she first met her. She had crackers in her mouth and she was saying, okay, don't spit on her. And when she said hello, the crackers came out of her mouth. Mary McLeod Bethune just laughed, you know, because Billy was a little girl, you know. But the thing is that the magnitude of this woman, why did we not know more about this? So I continued with my work and, you know, people enjoyed it. Things happened, like I won the Adelco Award for solo performance, best solo performance. I won the United Solo Theater Festival best educational theater award, and then their best solo play in 10 years. And then we went down to the National Black Theater Festival, and we sold out the National Black Theater Festival before we got down there. So something is happening where what the work that, it, you know, because you also have people working with you, directors and whatnot, but the work that we did was well received. And but there was still something for me that I wanted to explore. And I said, well, I could elongate my solo show, or I could write a new show and let's make it a multiracial cast. Because Mary McLeod Bethune was a person who was a connector. She was a mover and a shaker, but she was a connector. And she was connected to many people all over the world. And she advised all these presidents. And she was like best friends with Eleanor Roosevelt. So what can I do? I can bring the character of Eleanor Roosevelt in. I can bring the character of Franklin Delano Roosevelt in. And some other characters, some people, right? And also start with all the people who were her foundation. Because as I said, my mother, my father, my grandmother are my foundation. And I found we had that in common. So I remember before doing that, I remember my dad and I, well, my mother, father, and I, we were in D.C., and I was going to her statue there, not the one we have now in Statuary Hall. That wasn't there yet. But I remember feeling such pressure because I felt, oh, gosh, I'm not worthy. And my father's like, you know, just take your time, take your time. And I'm like, oh, Daddy, but this is, I had to take my time to approach her statue because of the amount of love and care that she put into our world, sometimes sacrificing her own life. And all of that, and during this lovely pandemic that, when I'm saying lovely, meaning the space it gave us to think, you know, not the tragedies that occurred, let me rephrase that, but the space that it gave us to think, I chose to use that time to create a new work for six actors. People said, don't have six, it's too expensive. Six actors, and it's a multiracial cast. And just like I can play many roles, all of my actors can play many roles. And we all come from the Actors Studio. And I had been working with them over the pandemic. They've been reading my work. And as I was developing it, and my director, I'm in the Actors Studio Playwright and Director's Workshop, as well as being an Actors Studio actor member. And we developed, I listened to it and I kept working on it, listened to it, brought it in, got critiques, whatever, and kept developing it. And then it was still something. And I was just like, okay, God. Okay. And I said, please, I knew it was something. I just need you to just open up my mind, open my brain. And I'm trying to, and then all of a sudden it happened. And then I felt Mary McLeod Bethune's hand guiding me the rest of the way on this journey. And that's where I feel now. Everything that has happened has been, I won't say, has been a part of a divine journey. So I continue on it. I'm doing all the work. I got great people I'm working with, and everybody's committed to it, and everybody is finding their own Mary McLeod Bethune in themselves. This is all the multiracial cast, the whole multiracial company. Everybody can see a part of Mary McLeod Bethune, and that is what she did to our world. And when they finally, I think 2018, decided they were going to have a statue unveiled in Statuary Hall, well, it took until 2022 for it to happen because we had the pandemic. But Mary McLeod Bethune is in all of us. Mary McLeod Bethune is in that mother who has to decide how she's going to be a mother and a wife and be a professional. that Mary McLeod Bethune is in, that person who has to figure out how they're going to meet this challenge, think their way through it, and get to the other side. Mary McLeod Bethune is in how you're going to bring people together to move forward, or how you're going to make changes in the law. All of the politicians who are there now, the women of color in particular, Mary McLeod Bethune would be thrilled, because those women, our vice president said it. And I was like, oh my gosh, she mentioned all of these women. And she said she's standing on the shoulders of these women. And Mary McLeod Bethune was one of these women. You look at Val Demings, Mary McLeod Bethune, she said, was like a mentor to her, right? So, and I feel that I can't say she's my mentor, but I can certainly say she is influencing and helping me move through this journey, because everything I have done on this journey has been by faith. Things I didn't know, I go and figure out, I read, I do all the necessary things I need to do, because I know this is important. It is important that it is done. That's why I had to tell a story that encompassed more of her life, because somebody out there needs to hear it.
Okay, so let's just take a moment, just in case there's somebody out there listening who does not know who Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune was. So we know that she was an educator and a civil rights activist. So why don't you fill in some of those blanks really quickly and briefly about her legacy?
Okay. First of all, she was the first person in her family born free after the Emancipation Proclamation. And when she was able to be educated, she flourished and taught everybody else. She taught farmers and sharecroppers, black and white, how to count so that they wouldn't be cheated at market time. She went on to found her own school, Bethune Cookman University, which is in Florida, and they're thriving right now. She went on to, she was in so many different organizations, that the National, the NAACP and the Red Cross, the National Association of Colored Women. And then she founded the National Council for Negro Women. So, and they were a small organization. Now they're like over 4 million strong, including all these college campuses. She advised several presidents, most notably President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, and President Harry Truman. So she has been influential in every moment in our lives. And she along with other notables like Ida B. Wells, they've been fighting for this anti-lynching legislation that just passed, mm-hmm. right? So she has been in every nook and cranny, helping us with the war, helping where we could be a part of the war to help with our country. She had Eleanor Roosevelt fly with the Tuskegee Airmen to prove that Negro pilots could fly. She's been in every aspect of every single thing that we enjoy right now, every aspect. And well, I'm here to tell you, we have to honor her. And as we honor her, we honor who we are as we continue on our journeys in life.
What is Bethune, our Black Velvet Rose, about? What is that story that you're telling?
Okay. So with this new statue, I was already writing the play. So with this unveiling of this new statue, so many people sent me photos and I already knew about it. And, you know, and then one of my friends was like, something about that rose. I said, yeah, I know. And I'm reading and reading. And I was like, the Black Velvet Rose. On a trip to Switzerland, she saw a garden full of multicolored roses, and she saw a black velvet rose in the center. And to her, this was a symbol of racial equality. And from there, she started calling her students her black roses. So it's how life should be. She said, people thriving side by side peacefully. So the story of Black Velvet, Bethune, our Black Velvet Rose, is where a student there at Statuary Hall, and they're taking pictures because, you know, this, she was just unveiled in Statuary Hall. And one student in particular has studied her and knows all about her, but still wants to know more. And Mary McLeod Bethune's statue comes to life and takes the student back through time to 1884 and beyond.
And there is music involved with the show as well. It's live singing. What kind of music is it? Is it things that have already been composed that are out there already, or is there new work that you're going to be presenting through the music? Is the music done a cappella? How is it? How does the music move forward the plot with this show?
Okay. So the music is a part of the show because Mary McLeod Bethune was also a wonderful contralto singer. Mezzo soprano in the choir. So the music is a natural part of things. It moves the story forward. In certain scenes, you see people all of a sudden singing. There's a scene where they're working earlier. Her family's working before she was afforded education, and she's leading the singing. So we're looking at Negro spirituals. We also will hear the great Marian Anderson sing at Lincoln Memorial, because she and Eleanor Roosevelt made it possible for her to sing at Lincoln Memorial after she was turned down by the Daughters of the American Revolution because she was a Negro. So there's music, but of course it's emanating from the actors. And of course, there's a scene where Mary is confronted by this organization, who we won't name, but you'll see when you see the play. And then there's a natural hymn that emanates from her and the students. So it's parts in there. It's not a musical.
Right.
It just helps flavor what it is, what story we're telling in that moment. We also have slides that we're using. That's something new in my work, using slides, because first, by faith, The Life of Mary McLeod Bethune did not have slides. I figured it's just the actor and I can do it. Now I have designers and they have ideas. I'm like, wow, this is great. I didn't know about this, you know? So we have we have Harlan Penn, who's, you know, just masterful. He's our set designer. Jean Travis, she worked with me on another show. She's our sound designer. Anna Corrali, she was actually overseas when we were talking about this. She's our projection designer. And let's see, and Duncan Davies, he's our lighting designer. And Sally Lesser, who I've known for a long time, she's our costume designer. So they have these wonderful ideas, and it's nice for an artist to sit back and look and see other ideas come into play. And you're going, wow, it just makes this, it's a whole full theatrical experience, more than I did with First by Faith, The Life of Mary McLeod Bethune. So I'm excited about that. And our director's great, Kathleen Brandt. She, like I said, she was over there with me at the studio. And Lawrence Floyd is our production stage manager. I just want to mention the name. Shameli Singh is our production assistant. And then I have these wonderful actors, Brian Hickey, who I work with on this homeless play. We were a two-hander, Brian Hickey, Judy Jerome, actor studio member. Brian's an actor studio member. Charles Black, he's not an actor studio member, but he's been over in the studio enough. He's like an actor studio member. And then we have two actor studio drama school graduates, Stephanie Anue and Samuel James Pygat. And they are truly outstanding. And these are the people who, over this 2-year period that we've been in this pandemic, said, sure, Rashada, whatever you need. Now, there are other people, too, who are in the actor studio who also, but these are the people who said, sure, I'll read. Except for Judy. We couldn't get Judy, but we got Judy for the play. But, and so for me as an actor, you know, I said, well, why not ask the people who've already been doing the work for free and bring them into this production? And, you know, pay them because they're already doing the work and they do it well. And let's put on a show. Let's do this. So that's what I mean, because I know I would appreciate it as an actor. We put in so much work in people's plays, you know. So that's what we're doing. And we're having a great time. You know, we're having a great time. Yes.
This is Backstage Stories on listener-supported WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at WBAI.org. You have been listening to a conversation that I had earlier this week with four-time Adugal Award winner Risharda Abrams about Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose. The play, written and produced by Abrams, will run October 7th through the 23rd at the Theater Lab in New York City. Risharda also stars in the play. Here is the third and final part of our conversation with Risharda Abrams. And we're back with Risharda Abrams, and we're talking about Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose, but we want to circle back to talk about her music director and what she brought to this process. So, Risharda, why don't we begin there, and then we can talk about accessing tickets to the show, getting show information, and how people can get in contact with you. And I also want to get back to the question, the advice you're glad that you did not follow. So let's start with Amina.
Okay. So Amina Claudie Myers, I also have to say she's more than just my music director. She's like an auntie to me. Amina taught me, she's my vocal coach. She taught me singing. I'm in her group, Generation 4. We actually just got back from Spain this summer and performed a concert there. But Amina, her roots are in the South. So she's from Blackwell, Arkansas. And she came into our rehearsal. We had a music rehearsal with Amina, and she was teaching us the songs. And so teaching us, you know, the intonations, and she had a melodica because she didn't need a, you know, a piano. Because, you know, you taught songs like that, storytelling, you taught songs like that. You didn't have to go to a piano. So, and even though she's a wonderful pianist and composer and multi-instrumentalist, which I told you before, and also playwright and, you know, so Amina is also a storyteller. So Amina started going into, we were talking about picking cotton. We're trying to, cause we're all doing all this research, and Amina went into her days as a child when she would visit her family members and say they would pick cotton. And she was talking about the experience. And then she went on to other experiences. And basically the room shifted because the amount of history that she was imparting really landed on all the actors and the director. And it made you have respect for our ancestors in a different way. What our ancestors did. And then I made a point of saying that everybody in this multiracial cast and company has an ancestor that started with nothing but figured out how to make it work. And really, that's what Mary McLeod Bethune did. She started out with nothing and figured out how to make it work. And we're all the better for it because we're sitting here now. And we, each person in that room could see how there's a bit of Mary McLeod Bethune in all of them, right? And Amina's spirit and her love of people and life and just her warm vibration that she brings into the room placed us all in that area where we've been doing all this research, but having a real person in the room, just put the icing on the cake. And she just has a way of doing that. So I'm just grateful just to have her because she's just a blessing. So I'm just grateful to have her with us.
And the advice that you're glad that you did not follow. I love this question.
Okay. Oh, I forgot one more thing about Amina. Just so you know, she's a great card player. And she taught me how to play Bid Whist. And I'm a master now. Just letting you.
I came out of a pinochle playing household.
She can do that too. No, she plays them all. She's good. Okay. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So now back to your question.
The advice that you're glad that you did not follow.
Okay. So at 13, I went to meet this agent, Lester Lewis, and he was like premier agent at the time, and he was such a nice man. Oh my gosh, he was so nice. And I sat down with him and he looked at me, you know, we had our conversation. He looked at me, he says, listen, he says, if there's anything else you can do, do it. Don't do this, do that. And I looked at him at 13. I'm like, but acting is my life. So I didn't take his advice.
And we are definitely the better for it. I am so glad you did not listen to him. I am very, very glad that you did not listen to him, because I've seen you in performance, and it's important that I am so grateful that you followed your passion. Now, how
can I tell you one thing too?
Sure.
Marcia?
Mm-hmm.
This is important too. The person who gave me this is my dad. And he said, when you're on the stage, you're on the stage with a good friend. So that's what this craft is to me. That's my good friend.
Okay. That is definitely good to know. How do we get tickets and information about the show?
Okay. So we are performing at Theater Lab, and that is 357 West 36th Street on the third floor. That's in Manhattan between 8th and 9th Avenue, closer to 9th Avenue. And you can go to the website, www.theaterlabnyc.com. And that's spelled theater, T-H-E-A-T-E-R, lab, L-A-B-N-Y-C.com. And you can also go to my show website, which is www.firstbyfaith.com. Or you can connect with me or see what else I'm doing, because it's all connecting with me. See what else I'm doing at my Risharda Abrams website. That's www.risharda.abrams.com. And that's Risharda, R-I-C-H-A-R-D-A. A-B-R-A-M-S. And yes, I'm named after my dad. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also on social media. I have, it's really my artist page, but I can't change it on Facebook. So it says the Risharda Abrams fan page, but that's me. I'm also on Twitter at Drama Smith. And I am on Instagram. My show is at First by Faith. And let's see, I'm on LinkedIn at Risharda Abrams, and my other drama artisan on Instagram. But really, the First by Faith is probably the best one for Instagram.
Final question. What would you like people to get from experiencing Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose? What do you want them to take away from the production?
I want them to think and receive that they can do anything that they want to do in life. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't, because Mary McLeod Bethune did not let anyone tell her that she couldn't do what she wanted to do, and we are all the better for it. So I have had people experience receiving and experiencing their own Mary McLeod Bethune inside of themselves. So I hope that everyone can see their own Mary McLeod Bethune, because she's in all of us. No matter where you come from, she's in all of us.
Thank you so very much, Risharda Abrams, for being with us today. And we look forward to seeing Bethune, Our Black Velvet Rose. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much, Marcia. I appreciate it. Thank you so kindly.
This has been Backstage Stories. I'm Marcia Pendleton. Thank you for listening, and make sure you support Bethune, our Black Velvet Rose. The world premiere will play October 7th through the 23rd at the Theater Lab in New York City. For tickets and more information, visit theaterlabnyc.com. That's theaterlabnyc.com. Dr. Bethune told the laborers, "Now don't be afraid. Just hold your head up high." And it is in the spirit of that sage advice we are going to leave you with "Keep Your Head to the Sky" by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Join us next week on Thursday at 9 p.m. for the next Backstage Stories. Have a good one.
Hey, this is Jimmy. Who is this?
Hey, Jimmy, it's Linda, letting our listeners know that they can once again hear the Jimmy Dore Show.
Freak out. Don't freak out.
That's Thursday into Friday at midnight right here on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
You be the best you can be, and I'll keep being me.
Do not freak out.
Max Politics is moving to Friday. This is Ben Max from Gotham Gazette and the host of Max Politics here on WBAI Radio 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Our show is moving from Wednesdays to Fridays at 5 p.m., so check me out then with guests including elected officials, advocates, candidates for office, experts on a wide variety of policy and political issues, and more. We're going in-depth with newsmakers, analysts, and other great guests every Friday starting in August at 5 p.m. here on WBAI.
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to givetowbai.org and become a BAI buddy to support Free Speech Radio today.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
That's right. Your dial is set to 99.5 FM WBAI.